Well, we thank the Lord this morning for this meeting and appreciate being able to be here. I'd like to share a few thoughts this morning that on the title of it would be How to Win. Growing up, we had my children were younger. We had a ping pong table, and I played my son quite a bit. And sad to say, he didn't win very many games back then. But now I'm in my 50s, and he's 27, and it's kind of turned on me a little bit. And last time I was out there earlier this year, and he worked me over pretty good. Anyway, I came home, and I told Leah I need to practice my serve. And she said, "What?" I said, "Yeah, I need to practice my serve." And my serve wasn't being very effective. So I did. I didn't spend a whole lot of time, but I practiced my serve. I got to where I could serve it better, harder. And then, during Lucinda's wedding, we ended up at Philip's house, and he has a ping pong table. And I got to play my son again. And lo and behold, I was able to beat him several times. And does anybody like to lose? I don't know if it's a guy thing. Girls maybe don't feel quite so much. But, you know, when you get up in your 50s, I feel like I can still compete, still be a part, still do. But usually we don't like to lose in things of life. Losing is very difficult, and I guess sometimes it's maybe wrapped around our identity. Our identity is involved with it, especially for guys, probably more so. But we don't like to lose. I remember seeing the title of a book, which I didn't read. But the title of it was How to Win Every Argument. How to Win Every Argument. You know, when you're conversing with someone, you don't like to lose in that either. Don't like to be put down or second place. In business, we don't like to lose in business. Recently, I put a bid on a job, and I thought I was actually bidding too high, and had my nephew look at it, but there were a lot of things involved that I didn't realize, and I didn't come out very well. And those are always hard, difficult times, but we don't like to lose. I'd like to share an account. When I was in Oregon, we got to visit Evergreen Aviation, which is something I kind of always wanted to do, but didn't do it when we lived there. But on my trip back, we went to Evergreen Aviation, and it houses a big plane called the Spruce Goose. I don't know if you've all ever heard of it. This plane is very amazing. In fact, it's all indoors. It's huge. But the story behind the plane is that it was, I believe, World War II, and the Germans were sinking all of our ships. Their submarines were sinking our ships, our supply ships. And we couldn't get supplies, and one of the commanders in chief told Congress, "We need something to go over over the sea. We need something to convey equipment, men, materials over the top, because our supply ships are just being sunk left and right. And you know, that's a pretty serious problem to have during a war if you're not able to get supplies in to guys that are desperately needing it. So a man by the name of Howard Hughes took on the project. He invested, I believe it was $18 million or $20 million of his own money into this project. The war was going on, so metal was very hard to get. And so they built this plane virtually, big bulk of it, the body of the plane is made out of wood. It looks like metal when you just look at it. It's painted gray. But it was built out of wood. He had engineers. Most of the military had the cream of the crop of engineers behind the war effort, but he gathered up the few that he could get. And they were working on this project for 2 years. Well, the war ended at the end of the 2 years when they got this, before they got the plane finished, the war ended. And it got the name Spruce Goose. Howard Hughes did not like that name. But it became kind of a laughing deal. Because here's this big old huge airplane, and now we don't need it. Well, Congress invested $20 million into the project, and they were wanting their money back. And so they had these hearings in Washington, D.C., and it went on to a recess. And so during this recess, Howard Hughes goes back to California, and he flies. He takes the Spruce Goose. He gets permission to taxi the Spruce Goose. It's a water. It lands on the water. It takes off on the water. That's why they call it goose. Spruce is for wood. Spruce goose. And so he goes back. He gets permission to taxi it. But on this trip, he lifts the plane up. He actually flies the plane, which he wasn't really supposed to do. And he gets it 90 feet off the ocean. And then he brings it back down. And that's all the plane ever flew. When I was learning all this, I was feeling sad. You know, for this plane. And we got to take a tour. We went in it. We sat in it. Sat in the cockpit. Huge. The plane, I believe, could haul 3 tanks, army tanks. They could load them. For a wooden plane, it's really a masterpiece for as far as craftsmanship and workmanship goes, of making a wooden plane that would hold 3 tanks. Howard Hughes also wanted to keep the plane active in case there another war came up. So for the next 20 years, he invested $1 million a year just to house this plane, to keep it in. So he's got that for 20 million, that 20 million, another 20 million. He's got 40 million, 2 years of his life sunk into this thing. And I was feeling pretty sad and sorry for him. I mean, it just seemed like it was a failure. But then I realized, after we went on the plane and the guy gave a guided tour, he said there were eight new inventions that Howard Hughes patented in the building of this plane. 8 new inventions that he was able to get patented One of them was, the only one I remember was a flexible hydraulic hose. Up to that time, all it was metal hoses that were stationary. But on this plane, they built a flexible hydraulic hose. He gained millions and millions of dollars, far more than what he lost on that project. So I didn't feel sorry for him anymore. But just at first glance, it looked like it was a failure. It looked like it was a loss. Because it seemed like the plane didn't have... And then they shipped the plane, they took it apart, and then they moved it to Oregon. They didn't even fly it to Oregon. They took it apart, they shipped it up there, and then they put it back together in this building in the museum where it's housed today. Thinking about a paradox, and that's what this story is, it's a seemingly absurd or self-contradictory statement or proposition that when investigated or explained may prove to be well-founded or true. A paradox is something that looks like it doesn't work. It looks kind of a waste of time. But when you really begin to examine closely, you find out that there's some real benefits, some real blessing, some real strength that came from that. And I want to say our living for God sometimes is the very same way. Sometimes it looks like a paradox. It looks like when you just look at it, it looks like loss at the surface. I want to get a scripture in Genesis, the 13th chapter. Genesis, the 13th chapter. And the 8th verse. This is the account where Abram and Lot's herds were too big to dwell together. In verse 8 it said, Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Now Abraham had eyes too. And Abraham had brought Lot. God had called Abraham. Abraham had brought Lot with him. And I can picture in the back of my mind, you know, Abraham thinking, you chose the best for yourself. You know, Abraham could look. He had eyes too. He saw it was well watered. It said like the garden of the Lord. It must have been a pretty rich, luxurious place. But I want to notice here that Abraham, who won in this account? And who lost? You know, when time went on, Lot ended up losing everything that he had. And Abraham won. Not that it was a race, not that they were trying to win over each other. But Abraham came out well and Lot didn't. And I want to notice two things here is that Lot, he just went by the sight of his eyes. You know, it's so easy for us to do that sometimes. It's so easy for us to lift up our eyes and look, and we just see what looks good to us, what would be nice. But Abraham had something deeper working in his life than that. He had a consecration to God. He had a surrender in his life for the will of God to be done. And I want us to notice here, he said in verse 14, "And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever." So he told him after he departed, look up. You look up. It belongs to you. He surrendered his will. He surrendered his way. And he won. Lot, he just looked out and chose what looked good to him without a consecration, without real devotion to God. And he lost. You know, life is that way. You look in people's lives when they get older, those that have just went by the sight of their eyes, they lose. They end up losing. But those that put their trust in God, even though sometimes it looks like we lose, sometimes it looks like we're losing, but we will be the winners. Anytime that we surrender our life, our heart to God, and we allow the Lord to have His way, you know, the Lord has a way of reimbursing. I thought about that one scripture. It says, "He that lendeth to the poor," it said, the Lord said, "I will repay." In other words, he that gives himself, he that is not self-centered or selfish or self-focused all the time, but he gives his life, he gains. He gains ground. He gains spiritual. And I'm not telling us we're going to win by being millionaires or something like that, like Howard Hughes. But we'll win in the battles of life. We'll be able to overcome with the grace of God in our hearts, with the Lord's inspiration in our life. We'll be able to be victorious. There's a song that we sing at times. It says, "Many years I searched for rest, perfect peace within my breast, and I often sought the Lord alone in tears. But I would not pay the price, would not make the sacrifice, so I wandered on and on for many years." You know, sometimes we're afraid when we look out. We're afraid of maybe what the future is holding. We're afraid of, it doesn't look very enticing, very good to us. But we've got to look beyond just the natural eyes and have that surrendered heart that God's will would be done and accomplished in our life. And when we do that, we allow the Lord to have His way. You know, He does. He knows how to satisfy us more than we know how to satisfy ourselves. Sometimes, you know, we think of, we know what's satisfying. But really, we don't know us like God knows us. And He knows that we have desires. He knows that we have dreams. He knows that we have personalities and things that we like better than other things. The Lord knows all that, and He is able to satisfy our life. I don't believe we have to get to the end of life and as a child of God and say, I missed it. I don't believe we have to do that. I believe we can have the presence of God, the fullness of His blessing in our life, and we can say, the Lord has been good to me in my life. We stayed over here in the parsonage last night, and it just brought back a flood of memories of when we used to live there. We got our names engraved in the concrete, 1992. Bob and Leah, Dina, Lucinda, and Kara. And I opened the door, and there was my little study. A lot of dust and cobwebs in there and spiders in there now. But you know, the Lord met me there many times. And I believe when we can look back in our life, you can see the places where God met us, where His Spirit ministered help. When we were overwhelmed, when we were beyond ourselves, God met us. And I remember that little study, different times, that's where the Lord gave me a vision one time. And that's where the Lord opened up another scripture to me that enabled me to continue on. You know, the Lord is very good to His people. He's very rich. And He's able to meet us in those places. But so many times we look at the cross and we don't see behind the cross. All we see is pain and suffering and difficulty. And our natural man, our natural tendency is to, we want to pull back. We want to pull back from that. There's a prophecy in the Old Testament, and excuse me, I didn't get it. But in the Septuagint, it brings that the appearance of Christ's life and ministry was a failure. It brings that thought out. It brings that the appearance of what He did was a failure. But on closer observation, it wasn't a failure. One place said, for the joy that was set before Him, Jesus endured the cross. He endured the difficulty because He knew there was something beyond what He was able to see. He wasn't just led by what looked good to His. He was led by the Spirit, by the Scriptures. But our natural man sometimes wants to draw back too. When we see difficulty, we see suffering, we see the cross in front of us. And that's what this writer here was saying in his deal. He said, I sought the Lord many times in tears, but I wouldn't pay the price. I would not make the sacrifice. So I wandered on and on for many years. He drew back. He allowed his fears to inhibit him. But it doesn't stop there. Then one day, while knelt in prayer, Jesus whispered to me there, take your cross and follow me to Calvary. Oh, how sad it was to die, and all self to crucify, just to lose myself and find it, Lord, in Thee. You know, death is not easy. In our natural man, you know, we like to be on top, we like to win, we like things to go well. But that's where we find life, when we're able to die to ourselves, to the will of God. in our lives. Jesus, in different places, He talked about the first being last, and the last being first. And I believe it fits in with our thought this morning. Pilgrim's Progress brings that thought out about the two young boys that received their inheritance. And one boy, he got his inheritance and he just laughed and said he laughed the other one to scorn. But the other one patiently waited. He was in a place of trial. He was in a place of difficulty, and he just waited patiently. And then after a time, it said, the first one, he spent all of his up. He spent it all. And then the guy came in and gave the second one his inheritance. And he said, those that receive their second will receive it everlastingly. You know, God has an inheritance for us also. He has places. 1 Peter, the 5th chapter. In the 5th verse, it says, likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud, and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. This word humble here, I believe it means surrender. It's a surrender of our will and our way into God's will and God's way for our lives. And He says, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. That's winning. That's winning. When we humble and submit to God and we give up, we yield ourselves into His hand. And I want to say also, I know we do that initially in consecrating ourselves to be sanctified. But I want to tell you, it's all through our life. There's just going to be places where we've got to surrender ourselves. Sometimes we've got to surrender our circumstances and put it in God's hands. That's not always easy. It's what Abraham did. He was doing that when he told Lot. He said, Lot, you choose out what you want, and I'll take... He was surrendering to God his right. You know, Abraham really had the right, wouldn't you agree, to choose? But he surrendered that right because he had faith to believe that God would work it out. And we want that this morning. We don't want to just see the difficulty or see the trouble and draw back from that. But we want to believe that if I surrender myself to God, that God in His will and His way, He'll work it out. I may not know how. I may not know what He's going to do or how He's going to do it. But that's how we win. If we take our own way and we do our own thing and we just kind of grit our teeth and we grapple with it and we're going to do it, we're going to lose in the long run. But if we'll surrender and commit ourselves, and that's what he says here, surrender yourself unto God that he may exalt you in due time. You know, the Lord doesn't leave you down there. He didn't leave Christ in the grave. He resurrected Him. And the same thing happens in our life. When we die, the Lord resurrects. When we give ourselves, You know the woman, I thought about the woman too that brought the alabaster box of ointment. The disciples looked on that and they said, what a waste. What a waste of money. What a waste. What could, you know, that could have been so much better used. Jesus said, it wasn't a waste. It wasn't wasted. You know that surrender from our hearts is a sweet odor, is a sweet incense to God today. When we surrender ourselves to the Lord and we surrender ourselves to Him, it's a sweet incense unto God. It's a valuable perfume unto the Lord. And I thank God for that today. The Lord is interested in us winning. He wants us to win. But it's going to have to be His way. And it's in submission and yielding ourselves and seeking Him and allowing Him to have His way in our hearts and our lives that we truly win. And then for the grand finale, there's coming a time when this life is going to be over. And if we've been surrendering our heart and our life to God consistently through life, we've been giving ourselves and surrendering ourselves to Him. Though to other people it may look like a waste, but to hear the Lord say, well done, thou good and faithful servant, you've surrendered your heart. You allowed me to bless your life and to work in your life. That's going to be the ultimate win. And I want to encourage us this afternoon to continue to surrender and give ourselves to the Lord. Because this day, the years, I don't know how they do it. You know, I feel like my children ought to be like my grandchildren. But they're not. Time just has a way of slipping by. I don't feel like I ought to be in my 50s. My body feels that way a lot of times. I mean, if I know I'm not in my 30s, I can feel that. But it just slips by so quickly. And the best way that we can do is to surrender, to give ourselves to the Lord each day. Not just look at the difficult things, but pray, Lord, what is Your will? What's Your will and Your way in this matter? We want to remember that our natural man, our natural tendency is always to pull back. Jesus pulled back, didn't He? He had to go pray 3 different times to surrender Himself. Sometimes we may have to pray 20 times. We may have to pray more. But when we come to that place, Lord, have Your will and Your way. I'm tired of trying to figure this out. I'm tired of working it out. I just put it in Your hands. I give myself to You. And I'm going to trust You. You know, the Lord will work it out for a win to us. He'll exalt us in due time. Pray for me.